To stay with Emily would have just made them both unhappy in the end, so it was better to be honest with her now. The worst part of him was only worried that he'd ruined his chances. Without Emily to fight, his ability to react to threats would be significantly less. He hated to think it, but it was true. Since he had his final portfolio nearly prepared, Rick bitterly pulled out his phone. Name: Rick Hunter. Ether tier: 14th. Ether score: 353. Lucrum generation: 57,675. Current lucrum: 0. Rick Hunter's Lucrema portfolio. Foundation: 3,000, level 5. Dark Blood Kettle: 8,525, level 2. Offensive Lucor: 9,600, level 6. Defensive Lucor: 26,750, level 9. Bunyan Step: 11,050, level 7. Graham's Stake: 9,275, level 3. Demonic Bond, Buftgage and Yithsel: 250, stage 1. Demon Mass: 250, NA. Total lucrum: 57,675. He just stared at the numbers for a long time, slowly realizing that his cheeks were wet. Everything he'd done had earned him more lucrum than he'd ever had in his life and given him the best shot he could of making it through the fight against Jack. It wasn't any comfort. Chapter 52. The surveying competition begins. Despite how Rick had blundered, Melissa never once mocked him about the breakup. She just listened, patted his arms sympathetically, and helped him get comfortable after all the training. Rick slept like a rock. When he woke, he didn't feel quite as miserable, but he'd gained no added clarity. For a day, he kept exactly according to the plan, sleeping when needed and focusing on recovery otherwise. Melissa occasionally brought food over, watched their favorite movies, and teasingly called him a mallard head. Emotionally, he was still frustrated, and mentally, he knew that he was facing a serious challenge, yet he slowly found himself feeling somehow better. By the end of the day, he had no aches and pains at all. His portfolio hadn't improved, but it had recovered from the overtraining, and so he was ready. The numbers still didn't make sense to him, so he likely didn't have a handle on the Dark Blood Kettle yet, but he'd done the best he could. As it came time for them to go, Rick found himself fussing around the apartment. There was nothing left to do, so he fiddled. Melissa was doing some kind of final meditation that cast her void aura around her, as they intended to use it in the actual fight. They'd worried that her control wasn't good enough to avoid distracting him, yet her aura always passed over him harmlessly. He actually felt more comfortable with it around, like the void flame was just having her hanging out in the same room.
"Not long now, huh?"
Melissa opened one eye to look at him, then smiled.
"I assume we're not biking for once."
"Yeah, we need to arrive fresh. Plus, there's always a chance Jack might try to ambush us early. He's under pressure to win the competition, too."
"Sounds good to me. Maybe stop pacing around, though. Come here and sit down."
He might have taken her up on it, but at that moment there was a knock on the door. Both of them frowned, and Melissa retracted her void aura. Rick advanced to the door carefully, his body and aura prepared for a fight. When he opened the door, however, he discovered Lisa waiting on the other side.
"Hi, Rick."
She gave him a nod and a friendly smile.
"Melissa told me the competition is today."
"Yeah." He knew he should say something else, but wasn't sure what. Lisa stood awkwardly, one hand in her jacket. Bizarrely, part of him imagined that she was holding a gun and had come to assassinate him.
"Sorry that I can't fight alongside the two of you, but I really don't have any experience with this kind of melee, and I'm afraid I'd just get in the way."
"No, it's fine. You've already done plenty for us with all your support."
"Still, I wanted to wish you luck and give you this."
Lisa pulled out her other hand, revealing a clear plastic bundle. Inside, he saw a familiar red cloth and quickly realized that it was like his old jacket.
I knew you liked that jacket before it got so torn up. I couldn't find exactly the same type, but this one looks similar and it's rated higher, defensively."
"Thank you, Lisa. This means a lot." He took the package from her, looking over it with a slight smile. There was an awkward truth, though. I don't think I should wear it for today, though, because I'm pretty sure it'd get torn apart again.
Oh, I understand. That's fine.
Lisa seemed just a bit disappointed, but at that point Melissa emerged from the apartment to greet her. The two women chatted cheerfully while Rick got out the jacket and looked it over. It did look good, and he could feel that a bit of ether had been woven into the fabric so it'd be durable. Not strong enough to survive Jack's assault, however, and it'd be a shame to lose Lisa's present the same day he got it. At the end, Lisa hugged Melissa, urging her to be careful. Afterward, there was an awkward pause, then Lisa hugged him too. It was brief, but it felt right. He was glad that he hadn't somehow managed to push her away too. After that, Lisa flew away, leaving Rick and his sister to go find transportation to the site of the final surveying competition. Unlike the others, this competition took place quite some distance from Branton, and its location was obvious before they even got close. A wall of green aura cut through the wilderness, marking out a boundary. Rick couldn't see the ends of the wall, lost in the hills and turns, but the area within must be huge. Fortunately, there was a clearly marked gate relatively close. When they stepped out, the taxi sped away, leaving them with no choice but to go forward. Not that there had ever really been a choice. Far too much of his life rested on this one event. Not just surviving, but managing to win if he wanted to keep his job. It didn't help that so many competitors were already gathering inside. He saw familiar faces like Panjo, but also plenty of new ones who must have been hired to join the teams. One figure was simply a blur of aura, as if their very identity had been redacted. By comparison, Rick and Melissa felt a bit outclassed. There was no sign of either Jack or Damien, but before they got far, the woman in the green pantsuit approached him with her tablet out.
Thank you for coming on time. We need you to approve your outside supporters, sign this waiver, and then wait until the vice president officially starts the competition.
He glanced at the tablet she extended, and though he felt a twinge when he saw Emily's name there, otherwise it was exactly what he expected. After he signed, the woman glanced up at him and Melissa as if noting the missing person, but said nothing. When she was about to move away, Rick spoke up. Sorry, is it rude that we never asked your name?
No, I prefer it that way.
With that, she turned away, leaving them milling around with all the other competitors. Since they were all waiting, there was the potential for conflicts or conversation, yet the wilderness was strangely quiet. Even the normal sounds of nature seemed to have been suppressed, and Rick wondered if there were any animals in the region. Though he'd grown used to the aura walls limiting the landscape, he suspected that the effects went deeper. Melissa was sticking close and keeping quiet, so Rick led them to a better position and kept analyzing the group. He finally spotted Damien, standing with a man in South American combat robes. And more worryingly, the woman in the baseball cap, who tended to release solid walls of aura indiscriminately. Damien met his gaze and gave him the briefest of nods, though his eyes were hard. The others also seemed to have grouped themselves into small clusters, all checking out the competition. Most ignored him. Panjo seemed to look directly through Rick, as if he wasn't there, instead scanning Damien's group. Once he had looked over everyone, Rick still hadn't found Jack. Unless the man was hiding, he hadn't arrived yet, even though it was almost the time that the competition was supposed to start. Rick found his gaze wandering further, and when he happened to look skyward, he noticed that a limo floated over the wasteland. Even from a distance, when he pushed his senses toward it, he felt an intense amount of power. Could the vice president be there in person?
Bro, he's here.
Melissa tugged on his sleeve, and he looked back down in time to see Jack striding past the gate. He looked the same as before, though his tattoos seemed to writhe beneath his skin. When he saw Rick, Jack drew a finger across his throat and grinned, but Rick just stared back at the threat. Much more important were the two people on his flanks. There was a man in camouflage who carried several guns, and a muscular woman in a tank top who Rick thought was another competitor. He wasn't completely sure, but he thought the tattoos covering one forearm were new. Perhaps payment for her cooperation. A familiar clap sounded over the wilderness, though this time there was nothing to silence. The woman in the green pantsuit stepped up on top of a large rock and addressed all of them.
The Central States Lucrum Authority thanks all of you for your work over the past months. Though we've effectively dealt with the problem of Lucrum anomalies in this region, we wanted to give all of you one last chance to prove yourselves.
Many shifted restlessly at that, since gaining that attention had been their entire purpose for taking the job. Rick just found himself disappointed to confirm his fears. After this, they were all out of a job. Given how he'd invested all his money back into himself to fight Jack, he desperately needed that final bonus so he had enough to find another job.
We have artificially created several threats and several objectives within this region in the form of Lucrum anomalies and disruptions that will produce the entities you should all remember from the initial trial. None of them will be outside the aura barriers surrounding this region. The barriers will not impede you, but passing through them will be counted as retiring from the competition. In that event, you will keep your current merits and not be allowed to return. Merits in this competition will be earned for finding Lucrum anomalies. None are awarded for fighting the entities, but merits will be given for eliminating the artificial disruptions. No merits will ever be given for fighting other competitors, but as it is expected to be a common strategy, there is a system in place to account for surrenders.
An old man stepped closer, folding his arms.
What about if we get mobbed by the entities?
They will be less intense than in the initial disruption, but it is possible.
The woman frowned slightly at being interrupted, but easily shifted her speech.
If you are defeated by a human opponent, you will lose your current merits, but retain those earned to this point. If you surrender to a human opponent, they will receive all of your merits. Killing or permanently maiming will not earn you any merits in order to discourage excessively dangerous tactics. Our observers will not step in during the event, but if you forfeit, you will be extracted. In that case, you will surrender all merits and be removed from consideration.
So, it was a tactical test above all, offering everyone the opportunity to retreat and capture their gains, or continue searching and risk losing everything. The penalties for surrender were surprisingly heavy. Apparently, they wanted everyone to treat this like a real war scenario. Judging from Jack's grin, that suited him just fine.
Let me put up the merit scoreboard one more time, then I'll discuss your potential rewards.
As she spoke, a Lucrum panel lit up over her head. 1. Redacted, 261 merits. 2. Panjo, 245 merits. 3. Kate Durham, 236 merits. 4. Damien, 228 merits. 5. Heidi Cunningham, 225 merits. 6. Machk Baron, 210 merits. 7. Jack Ganas, 209 merits. 8. Rick Hunter, 201 merits. 9. Oswald, 197 merits. 10. Javiera Banks, 191 merits.
Anyone still on the merit scoreboard at the end of the competition will receive 1 month's wages and an additional monetary bonus based on their score. The top 10 candidates will receive double that. The top 3 candidates will receive a 1 million Lucrum Philosopher's Elixir. Finally, the candidate who performs best, as judged by the Vice President of Remnant Acquisition, will be given a rare mesospheric extract. Those are all the applicable rules. You will be transported to different entrances around the edges of the region. Not all locations are equal, but you have been seated based on your previous performance, balanced against team size and the number of outside teammates. The competition begins as soon as you enter from your true entrance.
With that, they all began to move, suited officials transporting them via various techniques. Rick reflected that he now understood the team sizes. Apparently, there was some disadvantage for larger teams in the location seating. He wondered whether or not Emily counted against him, then just tried not to think about it. It was time to fight. Their official used a teleportation-style technique to move them to a location outside the aura wall. Then he raised a finger and looked at his watch, waiting for the starting time. Rick felt Melissa reach over to squeeze his hand, and he squeezed back. Now! The official gestured to the aura wall, and a gate opened. Rick and his sister hesitated a moment, surprised that there was no tone or other signal, then rushed through the gate. Chapter 53. First Skirmish. Though Rick expected to be attacked from all sides, they actually ventured some time without seeing a single person or getting attacked. They were kind of just rushing forward mindlessly, which was a good way to lose the competition. He gestured for them to stop and glanced at his sister awkwardly. I guess if there's nobody nearby, we should actually try to find anomalies. Melissa shrugged.
I can't help with that, so I'll stand here and look fabulous, I guess.
It shouldn't take long. I've been using the surveying technique often enough. He'd partially expected an additional twist, but the aura between his hands lit up as easily as usual. In fact, the environment seemed to have less interference than many areas of wilderness, much less the Peakless Wildlife Refuge or the Lucrum Meth area. Soon he'd have a clear target.
Bro?
Melissa elbowed him, her eyes locked on a nearby hill.
Are those things the entities you were talking about?
He looked up and saw that she was right. Small, semi-visible shapes were coming through the grass toward them. Most of these moved more like spiders than dogs, which he hoped would reduce the amount of jumping they could do. In any case, this was the moment to find out if bringing Melissa would be an effective strategy.
All right, sis, do your thing.
Rick positioned himself in between her and the entities. There were several in view, one of them speeding up toward them. If it doesn't work, I'll counter them, so just focus on technique.
Yeah, I got it. Don't worry.
His sister closed her eyes and focused, then a void expanded across the ground around her. A circle of leached life and color expanded from her position. When it passed Rick, he braced himself, but he just felt a harmless burning around his legs. Eventually, it stopped, having formed a dark circle about 10 paces across. The question was if that would be good enough. He watched carefully as the first of the spider-like entities drew close and entered the dark circle. At first, he thought it didn't work and began to step forward. Then the creature let out a brief screech and crumpled up in an instant, utterly destroyed. Melissa let out a whoop, and Rick let himself relax a little, though he kept an eye on the next several as they approached. In theory, the number wouldn't matter, since the effect applied to the entire area around her, but he wanted to be sure. All the entities died instantly as they entered. Behind him, Melissa laughed diabolically. When he turned to glance at her, she raised her hands to either side of her head.
The power, the power! I can feel their feeble lives being consumed to feed my hunger.
Ha ha. Stay focused, sis.
Actually, they're not really alive. They're like constructs or something. But my aura is consuming them basically instantly, so they shouldn't be a problem.
As if to contradict her, at that moment a large, four-limbed creature rushed toward them. When it entered the void circle, it didn't hesitate. It just kept charging. Rick met it with a kick to the head, snapping the creature's neck. Once it fell, it crumpled up alongside the others. But his sister frowned.
Okay, it looks like if they're not weak, my aura does no good at all. I don't think it even slowed that one down.
That's fine. You keep all of the small ones off me while I keep surveying. They advanced forward as Rick went back to the survey technique, zeroing in on a nearby anomaly. Smaller entities rushed them regularly, but they were always consumed. One ran in with a flying leap, but crumpled in the air just the same. Though only a dark circle was visible along the ground, Melissa's technique extended in a full sphere around her. Occasionally, a larger creature immune to her aura approached, but few of them were actually strong. Rick usually didn't even need to stop surveying, just dealt with them via quick kicks. Once they did get rushed by several large entities at once, but Melissa showed off her combat training and managed to beat one down with just a scrape on her arm. With Melissa's technique, they burned their way through the entities and found an anomaly in surprising time. Rick had expected some kind of final challenge or for their way to be barred by someone else, but it was possible that they were moving faster than average. When he applied the wooden sphere to the anomaly, the entire thing vanished and a light glowed in the sky above them. Oh, shit. Rick gestured for Melissa to go, glancing at the light nervously. There'd been nothing said about that, since the lights effectively made successful candidates into targets. As they tried to find another Lucrum anomaly, he spotted several other glowing lights, but they were far enough apart that he thought their little duo might actually have found more than anyone else so far. Could they win this? He certainly couldn't fight the strongest candidates, but they might be able to move faster, and he thought he was good with the survey technique. If they kept moving and avoided too much combat, then maybe he could get into the top three and get the insane philosopher's elixir. That might take some luck, like one of the top candidates getting eliminated, but they could try. Then, without warning, they rounded a hill and stumbled across a battle. There were several candidates Rick didn't recognize, but also Jack and his allies. He instantly dropped the surveying technique, at first thinking to scout around the fight, but Jack's head whipped around, noticing him. The other man grinned, and his tattoos glowed stronger with light. Though the other fighters would provide a distraction, Rick had to assume that Jack and his allies would come for them. The worst threat among them was the gunslinger, since he could target Melissa, attack from a distance, or easily support Jack as he fought. Fortunately, the man was distracted and vulnerable. Rick used a bunion step to cross the distance between them in an instant, yet somehow the man noticed. He'd been aiming with a rifle, but dropped it in order to draw a pair of handguns. The first swung up, and Rick struck his hand so he couldn't aim, but the second gun had also risen. Rick barely managed to dodge to the side before the gun fired. This guy was stronger than he looked. There was no sense in holding back. Instead of just striking, Rick flattened his palm against the man's side and pushed Melissa's void flame into him. Realizing that something was wrong, the gunslinger clutched his chest and began to try to resist the flame's consumption. Before he could, Rick kicked him savagely, sending him crumpling to the ground. On the other side, he spotted Jack and the woman in the tank top. At first, he felt relief that they hadn't seen him use the void flame technique. Then he saw that they were targeting Melissa. Rick knew that they would be expecting him, but he still had to rush to intercept. Melissa had dropped into a combat position, but she couldn't fight both of them. In fact, it seemed that she understood, retracting her aura and letting several nearby entities come in and make the fight more chaotic. He used a bunion step to throw himself directly into the woman in the tank top with a kick. She saw him coming and managed a block, but he just kicked off her defense. His only goal had been to stop her assault toward Melissa anyway, maybe knock her into some entities. Instead, he launched himself toward Jack. The other man didn't look until the last second, when he proved that he'd been waiting by swiveling without warning to attack. His fist blazed past Rick's chest, pulsating with aura, but there'd been just enough time to dodge. Unfortunately, before he could counter, Jack was already kicking at him. This was what Rick had been training for, though. Instead of blocking as he normally would, he pushed aside the attack, redirecting all the force. It surprised Jack just long enough for Rick to land a body blow. Just a light jab, then he ducked aside from the next swiping punch to jab again. The purpose of refining his technique had been to avoid overextending himself and instead chip away at his opponent. Before they could fight for long, a wave of entities crashed over the nearby hill. The unaffiliated fighters panicked and retreated, defending themselves in a ring, but Rick and Jack were too distracted. Both of them were knocked sprawling by the swarm of entities, Rick suddenly having to defend himself from many teeth and claws at once. Then all of the spider-like creatures near him crumpled up and died. Rick felt the familiar void and saw that it had extended from Melissa, but he also saw that she was barely managing to flee from the woman in the tank top, who was completely unharmed by the void aura. Rick pushed off the ground to stop her, but this time the woman was ready. He barely ducked under her first swipe, which put him into position for her uppercut. Fortunately, he was just a bit faster than her, dodging aside. He retaliated with an elbow directly to the throat. The woman grunted, but didn't give way. Damn, she had a strong defensive core, maybe stronger than his. His momentary lapse had let her regroup and keep attacking. Rick nervously gave way, risking a glance to the side. Melissa was free now, but uncertain how to help. Jack was tearing his way free from the entities and would be on them soon. He only had a short time. A loose rock behind him sent Rick tumbling to the ground. The woman roared and lunged down at him, intending to pummel him against the ground. Rick kicked at her torso, and she just took the blow and kept coming, aiming to pin him. But that had been a distraction. Rick braced himself against the ground and swiftly pushed both feet into the woman's stomach. Not in a kick,
He used a bunion step off his back at the same time he extended his legs. The blow did no harm, but it sent her flying through the air so far that she hadn't landed by the time he hopped back to his feet.
Wow, how'd you blast her like that?
Melissa came up beside him, still in a cautious stance. I didn't. Rick brushed himself off a bit, taking the free moment to get his focus back. She was too tough to harm easily, but her defensive core doesn't keep her anchored in place, so it doesn't stop her from getting pushed a long way away.
Good thinking. Uh-oh, I think Jack is...
Rick felt the surge of power while she was still speaking. Even as he turned toward Jack, he saw a gleam of gold from the corner of his eye. Based on his research, he knew that it had to be the Raging Eagle technique, so he pushed Melissa in one direction and leapt in the opposite one. A sphere of pure lucrum tore through the air where they'd been standing, trailing remnants that looked like golden feathers. But that was only the beginning. Instead of the normal aura of Jack's tattoos, all the ink on his skin shone pure gold. He raised his hand and released another screaming sphere. Though Rick dodged with a bunion step, he knew what was coming next. Jack released two spheres in quick succession. Rick dodged the first with a bunion step, which put him directly in the path of the next. Only by flattening himself to the ground did he avoid it, feeling the spheres sizzle overhead and the trailing feathers burning against his aura. Unfortunately, he couldn't straighten in time and barely dodged back. The next sphere exploded against the ground in front of him, knocking him backward. It hadn't been a direct hit, but he was stunned and his ears were ringing. Jack was panting, the golden aura in his tattoos flickering, but then it roared back to life and he raised a claw-like hand to launch another one. Just how long could he use that technique? Rick had counted on it exhausting him, but Jack was no idiot who spent lucrum like water. This was a carefully constructed technique, polished by combat. If Jack could keep it up for long, that would be seriously bad. As Rick dodged again, he saw something even worse. The gunslinger was standing on a nearby hill. Though he smoked faintly, he'd overcome the void flame already, and he was still able to fight. Worse, he was raising his rifle and sighting for Melissa. When Rick tried to use a bunion step to charge at him, he had to desperately throw himself back to avoid another sphere sent to intercept him. Damn it, Jack had seen him, noticed, and adapted already. Rick was hard-pressed just to avoid the spheres bombarding him, leaving him helpless to assist his sister or even call out to her as she wasn't looking toward the gunman. He was completely helpless to do anything but survive as the gun slid toward his sister. Chapter 54. Last Second Gambit. Purple aura erupted from the gunslinger's chest. He let out a gasp and collapsed, revealing Emily standing behind him. Even as he fell, her aura sword sliced his guns into pieces. Snarling, Jack released a sphere toward her, but Emily extended one of her blades and used it to pierce the sphere before it reached her. When it exploded harmlessly, Rick saw uncertainty join the rage in Jack's eyes for the first time. His ally in the tank top was coming up beside him, but she glanced in his direction uncertainly. Instead of a normal assault, Jack drew the rest of the golden light in his tattoos out into the air, then simultaneously released three spheres at once. Emily cut hers just as easily, and Rick dodged aside, but he was more concerned for Melissa. She saw what was happening and tried to dodge, but the golden explosion seemed to partially catch her and her body was flung to the ground. Rick leapt toward her as quickly as he could and sighed with relief when he saw her struggling to get up. She looked a bit scorched and was groaning, but she was okay. He looked to confirm that Jack was moving out of range and then bent down beside her, checking that nothing was broken. You're all right.
I'm okay, Rick, honest. But I need to get you another void flame since you used the old one.
She struggled to form another, but it was obvious that her control was shaken and it took her longer than usual. Don't push yourself too hard. But yes, I used it freely because I knew you were here to provide more moral support. That got a weak smile from her. Then suddenly Melissa's expression shifted to one of shock. Rick was puzzled for a moment before an aura blade suddenly pointed at his throat.
Emily stood beside him, staring down with emotionless eyes. She was obviously deep in her combat trance, and when she spoke, her voice was dangerously flat.
"I'm still bitter and pissed at you, Rick, but you weren't a dick, and I appreciate you being straight with me. So you have my support for one more fight."
With that, she retracted her aura blade, though she kept her hand pointed at him as if it might come back at any moment.
"Thanks, Emily."
He helped Melissa get to her feet and accepted another void flame from her as soon as she was ready. Though they'd retreated from the explosions, some nearby entities were now returning to attack them. Emily readied her sword, but now that Melissa had recovered, she expanded her aura to consume them. Rick wasn't sure how Emily would react, but she just glanced at the crumpling bodies, then the aura, then Melissa, then seemed to ignore it entirely.
"Okay, bro, what's the game plan?"
Melissa smiled over at him, despite what she'd just been through. It was a good question.
"I don't see Jack anywhere nearby."
Rick took a deep breath, trying to refocus. Having Emily here raised their combat power considerably, but did it actually change their strategy?
"Either he's waiting to ambush us, or he's going to try to find another Lucrum anomaly before they're all gone."
"Standing around here's not an option, so I guess we do that too?"
"Yeah, I guess."
It was a bit difficult to return to the simple surveying technique after the fight, but Rick managed it and helped them target another anomaly. His work was now completely unimpeded because Melissa destroyed all the smaller entities and Emily easily targeted the larger ones who could resist the aura. She said absolutely nothing, but seemed to work together with Melissa easily. Unfortunately, their rapid pace didn't profit them because others had already found the anomaly he was tracking. When they came to the top of a hill, Rick let the aura between his hands fade and just stared down at the fight below them. Two groups were currently fighting furiously, and he recognized Damien and Panjo in the midst of it. Damien's ally was flinging columns of aura everywhere, threatening all the fighters and annihilating any entities that could even get close. Everyone in the fight was probably a middleweight. There was no way Rick could get himself involved in a fight like that.
"Behold, my family's secret technique!"
Damien drew the eye with his shout, and Rick saw the absurdly complex black aura build up around his raised hand. Damien had been fighting against a man in a dark poncho who flinched when the technique appeared. When Damien lunged at him, thrusting the black aura toward his face, the man dodged back. With a mad grin, Damien kept swiping at him, just trying to make contact. His opponent managed to avoid his hand with desperate dodging, but the other man was getting closer and closer. Then Damien launched himself into a backflip that sent him sailing high into the air. His opponent stared at him in shock at the absurd move. A wide beam of raw power from the woman in the baseball cap carved a meteoric channel through the earth. The man in the poncho was momentarily invisible as the light of the blast overwhelmed him. When it faded, he crumpled to the ground a short distance away. His defenses had been good enough to keep him alive, but he was definitely not fighting again. After that, Damien landed lightly and gave a mocking bow in Panjo's direction. The other man glowered at him and called out a command to his allies. Unfortunately, their observation was interrupted by the fact that the woman wielding aura so recklessly now seemed to be even more unstable than before, blasts shooting from her in every direction. One nearly struck them, and though Rick dodged, Melissa only escaped because Emily grabbed her. They retreated down the hill to shield themselves from the blasts. Melissa's eyes were wide, and she was breathing heavily from the shock of the intense battle. Rick hoped that the blasts wouldn't have killed her, since the woman in the baseball cap was presumably trying not to kill, but she also didn't seem to be very good at restraint.
"What is the plan?"
Emily stared between them with that same flat gaze. Melissa nodded slowly.
I don't think I can fight in a battle like that. If there are so many strong opponents, how do we win this? It would be logical to take our gains and retreat."
Rick shook his head slowly as he came to the conclusion that had been in his mind for a long time. "That would make sense, if not for Jack. I don't think there's any way I can win the competition, but the scoreboard isn't the most important thing in the end. All that matters is..." He cut off as a golden sphere screamed toward them. Emily punctured the first one with an extended blade, but there were more coming, these curving slightly to attack from the sides. Rick jumped back, trusting Emily to take care of Melissa. After a rapid retreat from several more spheres that took them further from the main battle, they came to a halt. Jack followed after them, his focus having returned. His ally in the tank top walked alongside him, still essentially unharmed. Though Rick was willing to bet that Emily could hurt her, this time Jack actually spoke.
"I want to win, but I want to beat you first. Let's finish this quick, you versus me."
Rick cautiously dropped into combat position.
"Why should I do that?" "Because if you don't, we'll target the girl until we kill her. If she stays away, I don't give a shit."
Melissa flinched when his anger briefly turned toward her. It looked like she wanted to shout back, but he saw the truth in her eyes. She knew her limits. She nodded to them and retreated to a safe distance. After bending down to the ground, she extended her aura further than usual, creating a circle that surrounded them and would keep away any distracting entities. Emily tore across the space between them, but she attacked Jack's ally. If she was playing along, that meant it really was a one-on-one fight. Rick raised his fists and got ready. It looked like Jack had exhausted his ability to use the Golden Eagle Lucor, which meant it was back to the hand-to-hand melee. The two of them ran toward each other, Rick saving his bunion step for more desperate combat. Besides, he was wearing down too. Though he tried to adopt the same style he'd practiced, he was no longer at his sharpest. After several exchanges, one of Jack's blows managed to get through, catching his shoulder. Rick staggered back, biting back a grunt, and Jack lunged in for the kill. But though it hurt like hell, those devastating hits no longer disabled him. Rick deflected Jack's swipe with his good arm and managed to knee his opponent in the side. While the other man fell back, Rick tried to elbow him in the throat, but the pain threw off his aim. He still managed to land a solid blow on Jack's collarbone that made him stagger. They couldn't continue like this. Though Rick knew it was a valid strategy to stall for time and trust Emily to win her fight, he didn't want to risk the chance that in her current state, Emily might kill Jack. No, he needed to end this quickly before his weariness gave him too many more injuries. When Jack attacked again, Rick deflected his first punch and then released an aggressive but weak assault. Feint after feint mixed with shallow jabs that his opponent deflected. It made Jack hesitate a bit, then began looking for a chance to counterattack, which was just what he wanted. Rick reached out and weakly slapped his opponent's shoulder, but with that slap, he released the void flame into the other man's lucrima soul. Even as Jack let out a cry of pain, Rick hammered him in the face with his elbow. The blow took his opponent off his feet, sending him flying. Rick had expected him to land and try to quench the void flame inside him, but Jack tumbled several times and lay still. Aura pulsed through his tattoos fitfully, and the ink itself seemed to be shifting unnaturally. He didn't think the blow could have defeated his opponent, but maybe it had stunned him more than expected. If so, he needed to end the fight now. Rick lunged in with a bunion step, stomping down toward his opponent's back. The tattoos glowed brightly and lifted free of Jack's body. Though Rick could see them moving, deceptively simply, he couldn't possibly react in time. They extended like two claws formed from dozens of unnatural black lines, then grasped around his body. As soon as he felt the pain, Rick sent aura exploding around himself. It was barely enough to throw off the tattoos trying to pin him in place, just enough time to use another bunion step and get to a safe distance. He gasped for breath, realizing that he was bleeding from small cuts all over his body. If those tattoos had gotten a good grip on him, they could have been lethal. Both hands braced themselves on the earth and pushed up, pulling Jack into the air. He grinned bloodily as he rose, the tattoo claws arcing from behind his back. Rick wondered how he could have missed something so major, then realized the truth. Jack must have liquidated some of his assets into this new technique. It was less devastatingly powerful, but a nasty surprise that had nearly won the fight for him. Jack lunged for him, and Rick used a bunion step to dodge on impulse.
If he had ranged techniques, he might have managed, but he realized that he had no good options. The next time Jack attacked, Rick used a step to get just beside him, but the same instant he emerged, he saw one of the many fingered hands reaching out to grab him and threw himself back. He managed it, but the claws moved even faster, raking across his body and knocking him to the ground in a shower of blood. Rick barely managed to catch himself with his hands as he slammed into the earth. His injuries weren't disabling, but less shallow than the previous ones, and he had basically no time before Jack was attacking again. This time, when the tattoos reached out to grasp him, Rick lunged directly in, colliding with the other man. The impact seemed to stop the claws momentarily, giving Rick time to slam an elbow into his opponent's face and smash him into the ground, knocking his head back. Jack looked back at him and spat a tooth into his face. Before Rick could move, the claws tore into his back. He couldn't help but let out a cry of pain and stumbled back, but the claws were snaking out again, tearing more wounds through his flesh. The pain coalesced into a black agony that knocked him through the air, this time unable to catch himself. Yet as Rick struggled to his feet, body aching all over, he saw that his opponent had hesitated. Jack had used his tattoos to lift himself into the air again, then froze, staring at him. Rick didn't question his good fortune and forced himself up, yet his own attention was drawn to his wounds. The blood falling from them was black. He didn't question it, his mind dwelling in an endless ocean of dark blood. Rick managed one last surge of speed, crossing the distance between them and striking his opponent in the chest. Jack retaliated, the tattoos tearing into him, yet Rick didn't feel it. Maybe he was numb to the pain, maybe they weren't harming him, but it didn't matter. Grabbing his opponent's arm, he flipped him overhead and slammed him into the ground. This, at least, momentarily disabled all his cutting tattoos. They began to rise from his back, but Rick stomped on them. He saw the lines shiver and stomped again, then bent down on his opponent's back and began to pummel him repeatedly. His elbow rose, intending to come down on the back of his opponent's neck with all the power he could muster. At the last second, Rick realized what he was doing and held back, instead just delivering another blow to Jack's body. The tattoos slithered back under his skin, and the other man lay still. Rick managed to get to his feet, and then just stood there, panting for breath, not entirely sure what had happened.
Rick?
Melissa approached cautiously, concern in her eyes. He realized how he must look to her, completely covered in black blood. Having lost so much should have made him lightheaded, yet he still felt like he could fight. Emily arrived the next moment and dumped Jack's unconscious ally beside him. Her gaze flickered over Rick, then her aura sword lit up again. For a moment, he worried that she'd attack him, but she just tracked his movements with clinical precision.
I'm okay, Melissa.
He tried to rub her shoulder reassuringly and ended up gripping it to keep himself up.
I don't think I should fight anymore.
Then what do we do, bro?
Let's go back to that anomaly.
Both of them looked at him, Melissa uncertain and Emily unreadable, but they did so. Melissa had to support him as all of his injuries caught up to him. As the blood dried, it started to look more normal, as if it was just dark red and he had imagined any other color. Though his body was exhausted, Rick's mind was strangely clear. He knew what he needed to do. In theory, he could do it now, but there was still one loose end that could be a problem. Unfortunately, that part was entirely beyond his power. When he reached the hill, he saw Damien's group, but no sign of Panjo. Damien's suit had been severely damaged, the beam-firing woman was blessedly unconscious, and the last man seemed to be nursing a broken arm. At that moment, Damien looked up at them, eyes going hard. He quickly moved to stand in their way of the unclaimed anomaly.
You're in no shape to fight me, Rick.
Damien smoothed his tie back into his suit, examining him carefully.
The bare minimum you can do is not fight me and let me have this one.
Instead, Rick pushed away from Melissa and dropped down into a combat stance. Damien's gaze got harder, but then Rick mouthed the words,
"Play along."
Rick charged in with a bunion step, but the crimson aura around Damien let him slide around the attack. In response, he dealt several sharp blows to Rick's chest, but not as strong as he could have hit. He was playing along. When Damien grabbed his shirt, Rick sighed and went limp.
You win, Damien. I surrender.
The other young man's eyes went wide. He let go and drew back, the battle suddenly over. Rick staggered a bit on his feet, but that didn't matter. All the fighting was over now. Soon after, the woman in the green pantsuit descended from above, frowning at him.
It's too late to revoke your surrender, but you do realize what that means. You've lost all your merits to him. You don't place on the scoreboard, and you don't get any final paycheck.
Rick stepped toward her.
Yeah, I understand.
Chapter 55. A Quiet Conversation. The woman in the green pantsuit wasn't remotely troubled by his appearance. She just looked at him with distaste. That was good enough. It was time to begin his final gambit. Rick leaned close to her ear and spoke in a soft voice.
I have evidence that the American Basilisk is trying to insert an infiltrator into your organization.
Ridiculous.
She gave him a hard glare, yet it wasn't as confident as a moment before.
You think we don't track such things?
It isn't someone he's ever worked with before, but a local operative.
Rick knew the woman was far more powerful than him, but the fight wasn't about power anymore, so he forced himself to meet her gaze without blinking.
Maybe you doubt me, but are you confident enough to dismiss the possibility?
In response, he only got a flat stare.
I want to speak to the vice president. Let me hand in my resignation personally.
For a moment, he was afraid that she would disagree. Then her head tilted to the side as if she was listening to something. She made a sour face, then grabbed the front of his shirt and flew into the air with him in tow. In a dizzying second, Rick found himself flying alongside the floating limo. He'd barely recognized that fact when she wrenched open the door and threw him inside. After the chaos and blood of the battlefield, it seemed impossible that he was now on his knees in the air-conditioned interior of a limousine. His fingers were getting blood on the plush carpet, the seats were all expensive black leather, and an ominous man in a gray suit sat in a seat opposite him, regarding him calmly. It was the vice president who had arranged the competition. That fact got Rick part of the way there, but it wasn't over. As Rick shakily pulled himself up into the chair opposite the immensely powerful man, he reflected that all his strength was irrelevant now.
You claimed to have information that would be useful to us. I suggest you prove it quickly, because a minute of my time is more expensive than your net worth.
The vice president spoke in a smooth, cold voice, but the man hadn't dismissed him. Rick took a deep breath and searched for the words he'd been considering.
The American Basilisk knew that you would screen all candidates, so he made contact with a local competitor he had no prior connections to. Since then, the man going by the designation Jack Ganas on the scoreboard has been supported by him. You can guess what he'd do if he succeeded.
You have proof.
If you look, you'll find it. Jack's sister participated in a recent tournament, which led him to connecting with the American Basilisk. Then he formally opened a vendetta against me, which he attempted to fulfill during this competition. Verify any of my claims, and the connections will become obvious.
And how did you come by this information?
Local research. I have inside knowledge because I've had connections with the mafia boss known as Granny Whitney. I don't report to her, but I removed myself from the competition so that wouldn't be an issue.
To his surprise, the vice president chuckled.
How very altruistic of you. Since you went to so much effort to deliver this message, I should double your bonus, which is, of course, still zero.
So far, the man hadn't been impressed. Maybe he had already known about Jack, maybe not. Rick didn't think he could compete with a man like this. What mattered was that the vice president would soon throw him out, and he only had seconds to make more of an impression. For an instant, he considered throwing Damien under the bus. Based on how the other young man acted, Rick was fairly certain that the GLA didn't know about his intentions. Yet Damien had played along in the end.
No, Rick couldn't do that.
Instead, he decided to just throw everything he had on the table.
I know that I'm not going to qualify for a bonus or for entering your organization.
Rick slowly fished the wooden sphere out of his pocket and stared at it.
But I don't think your goal was to hire anyone from this group, was it?
We have every intention of hiring some of those who acquitted themselves well here. The answer came smoothly and automatically, but by rote. Rick thought he saw a flicker of interest in the vice president's eyes.
Maybe, but I don't believe that was ever the point. You see, I've been thinking.
If the Lucrum harvesting process was really so inconsistent that there were this many anomalies around Branton, they would be all over the world. We'd be hearing about disruption entities on the news. Besides, I don't believe someone who created that surveying technique wouldn't have a more efficient method to track down anomalies than hiring hundreds of local fighters. The vice president regarded him with mild amusement, then crossed his legs and laced his fingers over his knee. A wild claim. Why would we waste so much of our money on such a thing?
Because this contest was never about testing our skill. It was to use us in an experiment.
Rick lifted the wooden sphere again. This is too well defended for me to test, but I'd be willing to bet that this is gathering much more data than you claimed. Or maybe these entities, which you can artificially generate at will, were the true test.
Not inaccurate, but not correct. I'll give you one more guess.
He only had one left, so Rick just went for it.
I think that the disruption to the demon realm was the point of all this. You wanted to steal profits from your competitors, so you faked the Lucrum anomalies in order to cause all this. With that data, you can begin to squeeze the demonic corporations and make it look unintentional. But the details aren't important. What really matters is that everything you told us was a lie.
Are you trying to blackmail me? The amusement turned to cruelty.
That would be a stupid thing to try, wouldn't it?
Rick just smiled wryly, and after a while, the vice president smiled too.
You seem to have the wrong impression, young man. It is entirely true that the Lucrum harvesting process is imperfect, and also true that recent disruptions have led to certain anomalies. Making such public claims that couldn't be verified would be extremely foolish.
Maybe so, but that doesn't mean what I said was untrue, and you didn't deny it. The vice president smiled thinly.
You might not be stupid enough to repeat what you know outside of this vehicle, but if you're intelligent enough for that, what's the point of spelling it all out?
Though Rick wanted to breathe a sigh of relief, he managed to restrain himself to avoid showing too much weakness. He'd been sure that the corporation had cared only about their own profits and that the contest was a sham somehow, but he'd been uncertain about the exact details and if he could express them convincingly enough. Apparently, he'd managed to scrape through.
Amusing as this has been, the vice president said, I was serious about the value of my time. If you're not trying suicidal blackmail, why go to all this effort?
You hired us as tools, but that still means that you hired us in order to perform a service. Rick lifted the wooden sphere once more, this time handing it across the space between them. Despite what I know, I have provided that service. Simple capitalism would suggest that I should be compensated fairly. That got him a dark chuckle, and the vice president took the sphere from him.
Reasonable enough. One of my people will take care to include your unique contributions in the calculations.
The man gestured to the side, and the door opened, revealing the sky outside. As Rick started to move, he spoke again.
Despite what you may think, we never do anything for only one reason. We might not have scouted you for this, but let's say that this will be an interesting note in your file.
Part of Rick wanted to ask for more information, but power closed around him and pulled him out of the limo. He dangled for a moment before the force swept him down to the earth, only barely slowing his momentum at the last second so he didn't smash into the ground. After the dimly lit vehicle, being back outside was blinding. Rick just sat there, stunned, the conversation tumbling over inside his mind. Eventually, he was pulled out of it by the arrival of his allies. Melissa rushed to him and pulled him upright to hug him fiercely. His long-suppressed injuries began to complain, but he didn't care and just hugged her back.
Are you okay, Rick? Are they going to punish you in some way?
No, the contest is over. But I realized that the contest was never the point. Since the goal all along was to get the attention of the Lucrum Authority, I decided to skip the contest and do it directly.
He wasn't sure if what he'd won instead was actually better, but it was the best solution he could find. Jack was defeated, Granny Whitney paid back, Damien owed him a favor, and the vice president had taken notice. Maybe he'd be getting a paycheck, too, but that might be too much to ask. An official guided them to the exit, which wasn't so far away. When they reached it, Rick was surprised to find that he was basically free. The woman in the green pantsuit had him sign one last waiver covering proprietary corporate intelligence and authorizing a final bank transfer. Then he was done. When they got a short distance away, Emily moved to face them. She was coming out of her trance, but that was worse because he could see sorrow in her eyes. For a while, they just stared at each other, saying nothing. Then she seemed to nod to herself.
"You can call me if there's an emergency."
Emily turned away from him.
"Otherwise, I don't want to talk to you. Not for a long time."
"Okay, I wish..." Before he could finish his sentence, she burst away from them into the air, and they were alone. With all the tension gone, he felt odd just standing on the side of the highway with his sister. The aura walls were coming down, the contest apparently over, but he didn't really care who won. Without the walls, suddenly the entire competition and the desperate battle felt entirely unreal, as if they were just standing in the middle of nowhere for no reason.
"Are we biking back then?"
Melissa looked at him and smiled.
"Can I ride on your back?"
I think I'm a bit too hurt for that. You need to get your own bike."
"Okay, but you have to buy me ice cream."
Rick laughed and put an arm around her shoulders as they went to walk back to the nearest bus stop. It hurt, but the pain reminded him that he was alive. Chapter 56. Unemployed. The Aura Bear roared as it saw Rick trundling forward into a run. Its body weighed as much as a tank, yet it managed to build up speed as it rushed at him. When it arrived, one of the enormous claws came down on his head. "Hello to you too, Blue." Rick rubbed the bear's chest. It rumbled happily and pawed him for a while. Eventually it huffed, swatted him with a claw, and wandered off back into the forest. Once the bear had gone, Rick went back to searching around the area. Eventually, he felt something that seemed just a bit off and followed his aura instincts to the east. He bent down and examined the little stack of pellets. Yeah, that was jackalope shit. Not exactly an amazing discovery, but it was what he was there to find. Straightening, he slowly stretched his back and looked around. No sign of the beasts themselves. It was getting late, so he decided to head back by a new route, just in case they might attack him. If the things would just act as aggressively as before, he could have ended it in a day, but the jackalopes weren't throwing themselves at him suicidally anymore. Apparently, they nested more without a source of lucrum. As he walked, he felt a twinge in his ribs from his persistent injury. Strangely, that injury had nothing to do with his vicious battle against a mobster or the aura bear that regularly clawed at him. His day of overtraining had created a hairline fracture in his lucromasole, which had been exacerbated by all the fighting. According to Lisa, there was nothing to do but take it easy and let the fracture heal naturally. At the moment, he wore her jacket, still a bit new and stiff, but growing more comfortable as he got used to it. Given how shredded his clothes had been during the competition, he was glad that he hadn't taken it along. Once, it would have been a valuable gift because he couldn't easily afford a combat jacket. Now, the main value to him was the fact that Lisa had chosen to give it to him, though he still wasn't entirely sure how to feel about that. As he got closer to the offices, he saw Wimelat crouching to the ground, apparently monitoring soil composition with a small tool. When Rick got close, the other man stood up and smiled at him.
"Hey, Rick, any luck with the jackalopes yet?"
"I found a few traces of them, but I haven't found the warren yet. I was going to go log the locations with Adsela and try again tomorrow."
She already went home for the day. Tomorrow, I need you to help me reintroduce that dragon back into the wild, but otherwise you can go ahead."
"You finished rehabilitating the green one?"
"Yeah, and it's getting feisty."
Wimelat wiped off his device and put it away.
"Anyway, no rush on this. We want the last of the jackalopes gone, but we're not trying to kick you out, understand? It's nice having someone around who isn't family."
Rick just nodded, and they went in separate directions. It had been nice of Wimelet and Adsela to offer him part-time work, but he knew it couldn't last forever. The main problem they had was the group of jackalopes that had invaded the Peakless Wildlife Refuge. Once he dealt with that, he'd be unemployed again. And honestly, he was underemployed now. But that was fine. Several days after the competition, he'd received a substantial bank payment from the CSLA, as well as a package containing the mesospheric extract. All in all, he'd nearly earned back all the money he'd invested into the fight with Jack. Considering that the gangster seemed to have avoided him since then, he considered it money well spent. He hadn't seen Damien since then, and his CSLA login had expired before giving a final merit scoreboard. Reading between the lines from other information, he suspected that Damien had accepted a position with the CSLA. A few days ago, he'd received a message from an unknown number that simply said, "I owe you one for playing along." Though Rick didn't want to get involved with anything that heavy again, he counted that favor owed as part of his profits. As he walked back into the woods, Rick scanned the trees, just in case. His one disappointment with this position was that Delson consistently avoided him. Given the way the man could teleport, it was possible that they'd never run into each other. That was also okay. Rick didn't think Delson was avoiding him because of any great secret. The old man just didn't want to talk to him. In the time since the fight, Rick had gotten himself tested and discovered no real problems with his blood. Whatever the dark blood kettle was, it operated on a spiritual level along with Lucrum. He suspected that Delson had told the truth. It was no grand ability, it just flowed along with who he was. Eventually, he came to the main reason he'd taken the job at the Peakless Wildlife Refuge, the small cabin. It wasn't the best of places, just quarters from a time when they'd employed more park rangers. It had electricity from the main office, though, and it was a decent place to sleep. Since it didn't cost him a single lucrum in fighter's insurance, that was good enough for him. He walked up to the door, cleaned off his shoes, and stepped inside. Since he hadn't been in the cabin long, it wasn't exactly home, but it was comfortable enough. It had a bed, a desk, and enough space on the floor for training. For now, it would do. As soon as Melissa no longer needed it, he intended to finally close the lease on the old apartment complex. Though they had lived there for a long time, when he left, he found that he wasn't at all broken up about it. There had been good memories there, but also a lot of awful ones. Once they left, he'd be taking the positive memories along with him and leaving the negatives behind. It was a bit odd that he didn't have a message from his sister, though. Rick checked his phone again, then set it aside on the desk. That would work out, too. As much as he'd feared for his sister during the fight, he'd also seen that she could increasingly take care of herself. And her goddamn ether score just kept increasing. At the rate she was going, soon she'd be the most successful member of their family in financial terms. Rick thought he'd do well for himself, but he planned to make a lot of jokes about bumming money off her in the future. With work done for the day, Rick flopped down onto his bed, put his arms behind his head, and just thought for a while. He enjoyed working at the refuge well enough, but he was also glad that it wasn't a permanent position. What would come after it remained uncertain, but at least he had a lot of time to think. Sometimes that made his thoughts drift to Emily, which was still a bit painful, but he could live with that too. Every time he thought about their last encounter, he tried to remember the exact expression on her face. Maybe he was tricking himself, but he didn't think he'd seen any hatred there. Better to let her go on her own path than hold her back. A knock sounded on the door, and Rick realized how long he'd been lying in bed thinking. He forced himself to get up, wincing in the process, and went to open it. The door had barely cracked open when Melissa burst in, leaping up to embrace him. She moved fast enough that they ended up spinning around fully due to her momentum.
"Bro, I got in. I'm officially a young Lucrum Artist of America."
"That's great," he sat her down, mirroring her huge grin. The judges weren't too creeped out by the manifest destruction shell.
"Oh, some were, but there was a doctor who said it was really fascinating. He actually tried to convince me to do a YLAA year with a medical program, potentially doing work with other children who were born without aura sparks."
"You mean helping them become like you?" Melissa shook her head sharply.
"Oh, no. He didn't think my condition was ideal or something that should be replicated, but he thought that it was interesting and that I might be an inspiration to the kids."
She stuck out her tongue.
That sounds dumb, so I'm just going to try to get into more interesting programs. But that's something to decide later. I'm just pumped that I got in.
Yeah, you deserve all the congratulations in the world.
He paused, frowning slightly.
Wait, you aren't still working at the House of the Cosmic Fist, are you?
I guess technically I never put in my resignation, but whatever. Do I even really need to? Feels like it'd be easier to just not show up, since I'm on to better things.
Nah, you should do it properly. There's no reason to burn bridges, even if you never plan to put it on your resume.
More timeless brotherly wisdom. Fine, fine, I'll do it. After we celebrate.
His sister pulled off her backpack and began pulling out stuff, including a large number of cheesy snacks and a DVD of a movie that looked even cheesier. It made him chuckle since, despite the huge changes in their financial circumstances, he still looked forward to relaxing in exactly the same way. While she moved stuff around so they could watch the laptop from the bed, he went to get a couple sodas from the mini-fridge. He didn't drink them himself, but he remembered how Melissa had liked them way back when they'd been kids. She smiled when she saw them, and they clinked the glass bottles together before drinking. The last toast they'd made had been over obscenely expensive philosopher's elixir, and this one was over sodas that cost a few bucks. Both of them tasted good. There wasn't a couch, so they both sat on his bed to get ready to watch the movie. Before she started it, Melissa leaned over against him, and he put an arm around her. After a while, she spoke.
What now, Rick? Once I leave for the YLAA and you finish working here, where do you go next?
I really don't know.
And is that fine?
Yeah, I think it actually is.
This concludes Street Cultivation 2 by Sarah Lynn, narrated by Travis Baldry. Copyright 2019 and 2020 by Sarah Lynn. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Sarah Lynn and was produced in the year 2020 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright there too. Please visit tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.